Good morning, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Community Conversations. As we slowly return to the live-hosted morning shows, we may have a DJ, hopefully, who will be setting this show up in the morning. So with no further ado, we're going to launch in, but remind listeners that we are pre-recording guests right now because of the ongoing concern about spread of the virus during the pandemic. We have a limited number of people allowed into the studio and only under certain conditions. So it's with great pleasure that we take the opportunity to talk to some of the folks who have things to say of importance to our community, but might be voices who would be unavailable on a Tuesday morning at Sandpoint. And we're going to get to that in a little bit, but Julie, it's always nice to hear how your spring is going. What have you been up to?
Well, hi, Phil. It's good to be here as usual. And I agree with everything you've said about our gradual transitioning back into the live studio. I'll be in introducing the this interview that's been pre-recorded. And I just can't wait to get in there because it's such a nice, well, it just feels like we're getting back to normal is what I would say. You've asked me a question about what I've been up to in the outdoors. And my hubby and friends have just returned from, some of us have returned, but my husband Daniel and I have come back from a few days of fishing on the St. Joe River, and it was wonderful, but windy, very windy. We felt like we were at a standstill with so much wind blowing up the river. But other than that, wonderful time.
It was a windy weekend up here too. We had a couple outreach events I went to, and one of them totally destroyed an 8-year-old canopy. Snapped one of the legs and broke the joint in the middle, and out it goes to the dump. So, but no one was hurt. So it was a good day still.
Other than the canopy.
For our guests who have been following shows that Julie and I have been doing this spring, we generally recognize during May a number of topics bring them to bear because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And as we roll into June, we want to set the stage for today's interview by noting that June is PTSD Month. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. That topic in general and get to some very specifics. So, Julie, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Well, I'd be happy to. I would love to welcome you, Christy Bar-Rubin. Christy, you are a recreational therapist from Cheyenne, Virginia Medical Center, and you're a contributor to the chapter on suicide prevention among veterans. Hello, Christy.
Hi, Julie and Phil. Thank you so much. And I'm at the Cheyenne, Wyoming VA.
Oh, Cheyenne, VA, not Cheyenne, Virginia. That's so much closer.
It's much closer out west. And in the case of full disclosure, I should mention that Christy and I met many years ago on a through hike. Each of us were hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in 1994, and it was a small-ish community then. It's grown some since, but it is still a small community of long-distance hikers. And amongst them are a number of people who regularly listen to the show. So welcome, Christy.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself, your background beyond hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, how you got interested in recreational therapy.
Yeah, I have just always been, you know, I grew up just outside of the Washington, D.C. area. My dad was just an avid outdoorsman and took me on a lot of hiking and camping trips in that area. So I've always just found nature super therapeutic. And healing just for myself, it's something I probably, as many of the listeners, it's something you just crave, like you just have to get outside. And so, you know, that's one reason I've always been interested in service to people. I've, you know, volunteered as a youth, just love, you know, being a part of an active and vibrant community. And one way to do that is through, you know, outdoor education and outdoor recreation. So becoming a recreational therapist, when I was off in college, you know, truth be told, I had steered myself towards a clinical dietitian, but I was terrible at math and could not pass organic chemistry to save my life. So one day my college roommate came home with a brochure and said, "I think I found you a degree program that has absolutely no math." So I did a little more work on that. I volunteered in an adult day center with a recreational therapist to kind of get a feel for the job. And kid you not, on our very first trip, we took a group out fishing and I said, "This is the gig for me." And the rest is history. And it is, I do tell people I have the best job in the VA. healthcare system, because we really get to know veterans. And, you know, Phil and Julie, probably, as you know, I don't think you get to know people as well as you do, and at the depth you do, is when you're out adventuring together. You know, when you're spending that kind of quality time, time around a campfire, time on a fishing boat, just time meandering the trail, you really gain some, you know, insights into other people. And it's really a beautiful thing.
I think that's very true. And I'd also carry it, and would love to hear your take on this, which is that you also really get to know yourself very well.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, and I think that is one of the there's so much research, and I'll share a little bit with you later, but there's just so much research about, you know, nature's not just important to us as human, it is absolutely vital to our very existence. And I think the more we expose people to nature and make them feel safe in an outdoor environment, you know, give them the equipment and the education needed, I think we'll also have create more of an army to be, you know, good stewards of the environment and help us protect it, because it is absolutely essential to us as humans.
Yes, we need it, and it needs to stay healthy and safe. Christy, I'm wondering how you got from your degree program to be working with the VA. Did you have a connection with the military before that?
I did not. My father is an Army veteran.
Yes.
And so, you know, but I wouldn't say we were a huge military family. I worked and lived down in the Boulder, Colorado area. And truthfully, there was just sort of an opening in the VA. And I knew from some of my fellow classmates in college that they had really enjoyed internships within the VA system. And then it was a great place to work. And so I've been there for over 25 years. This June, I think, is my 26th year with the VA healthcare system. And it is absolutely, in my mind, one of the best populations to serve. You know, they've done so much to protect all that we get to have and get to enjoy. So, you know, giving that back is really an honor for me.
So what does a average day look like? Are you doing paperwork in the office, or are you out in the field fly fishing?
Not an average day, you know, it just kind of depends. So I work on a variety, you know, there's a variety of different recreational therapy programs and units, but I work on some inpatient units. One is a specific for post-traumatic stress disorder unit and substance use disorder. And then I do a lot of community outreach for veterans with serious mental illness. And so every day looks a little bit different. A lot of it is using our parks and recreation resources here in the Cheyenne community. So, you know, maybe we go out and fish at the local lake, play some disc golf, do an art class, take a walk, string up a hammock and watch the clouds go by for a few minutes. So there's really a variety of things that we do. It kind of depends on the veterans' goals and their needs and abilities as to what we can offer.
So you tailor some programs individually then?
Absolutely, yeah. So I do a lot of group programming, but then I also do a lot of individual programming for veterans. And I typically try to do, you know, I figure they can talk to me just as well outside while we're walking around as they can sitting somewhere. So they sort of know when they get me as to help with case management that they're going to be moving.
Well, moving helps everything. It helps with our mood. It helps with our overall health. So I 100% agree that should happen when one is getting other types of therapy. You work with a pretty broad range of disorders or problems for the vets. How do you program these things differently? Maybe tell us a bit about each one.
Sure. I think the VA, we kind of try to go on a strengths-based system. So what are the strengths of the veterans? And then one question, you know, I always ask is, you know, what matters most to you? Like, what do you want your health for? Because if I can figure out that underlying, you know, And sometimes it's as simple as, I want to be able to get on and off the ground to play with my grandchild. You know, it can be that simple. Or sometimes it's, you know, I want to be able to fish again, or I want to be able to hike. I have a gentleman I'm working with now, and I can't remember the name of the mountain, but it's somewhere in Arizona. And he hiked it with his dad as a kid, and he wants to be able to hike it for his 70th birthday in October. So we've really just been working on building endurance and just that balance and that strength from a stroke he's had to help him accomplish, like, that to him is important. So really just working with the veterans. Tomorrow, I'm taking a veteran just to the local lake fishing, and that's his dying wish. He's in hospice. His days are very, very limited. And when you ask him, he said, I just want to sit by the lake in the sunshine one last time.
That's a great introduction to the next question. You've touched a little on already, but tell us a little more about the impact that you see on the veterans' lives from the work you do.
Yeah, I think, you know, of course, I want to think that, you know, we have a positive impact on the people we touch. And I think the biggest thing that we give to people as recreational therapists, and probably a lot of clinicians as well, is just hope. I think hope is a driving factor in us as humans. You know, as much as I love my job, I'll be the first to admit that I don't like wait anxiously for Monday morning to arrive when I can go back to work. You know, we wait and we hope and we wish for the times where we can choose what we get to do in our free time, the times where we're not obligated, you know, by housework and jobs and the other things that, you know, are necessary in life. But for a lot of veterans, I think they lose a lot of hope after the military. There's a disability, there's injury, there's chronic pain. There's also often a lot of isolation with the population I work in. Within the military, they're very mission driven. And there's also that built-in camaraderie. You know, they serve for the man or woman next to them. And then you come home to a culture that is very individualistic in nature. Like, we do not operate quite that way. And I believe there's only about 7% of the adult population is veterans in this country. And I think two out of every, however many, you know, there's a lot of disability among the veteran population because of their service, especially among the combat veterans. So I think that isolation is a real thing. And the things we do help connect them to community, help connect them to other peers. We try to, you know, get veterans of similar interests out together. Like, hey, I know another guy that really wants to go hiking too. You know, what if he came with us? Because I truly believe that veterans are their own best resource, because I myself am not a veteran. So I haven't lived that experience, you know, but I can certainly connect the, you know, veterans together and help them build a network, you know, where they feel safe, where they feel they belong, and find a mission for themselves again.
Yeah. Christy, can any vet utilize your services? Obviously, there must be counterparts, similar jobs in other areas. But for example, if here within our area here in Sandpoint, is there such a thing? Is there a resource for veterans here?
I would imagine. So what is your closest VA? Do you know? The Sandpoint, is it like Boise or Idaho Falls?
It's probably Spokane.
Or Spokane. Yeah, so Spokane has a really great VA healthcare, you know, system there. And I, you know, I can't quote, but I'm sure there are recreation therapists. Recreation therapists are employed at almost every VA medical center. But I think the thing that I have seen in the past decade is a lot of nonprofits, especially outdoor-based nonprofits, whether it's fishing, skiing, river rafting. I know in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, there's Higher Ground, which offers so many really wonderful programs for veterans at no cost to get them into the outdoors.
I know there's a group out of Spokane. I believe they're still active. I know they were at least a couple years ago pre-COVID called Burning Boots, which was getting veterans out into the backcountry doing hiking and trail projects and things. And there are some groups out there, and one or more of those had a pretty high response rate from folks in Bonner County. And I'll probably just leave that there because I'm not sure of the current details or status of them. But there are increasingly, I think, a large number of groups like that forming around the country. And I believe active in Colorado, I'm sure you're familiar with, is the Wounded Warriors Project.
Mm-hmm.
And do you work with them at all? Or would
you know, we have done things in the past. There's Wounded Warriors, there's No Barriers, there's Adaptive Adventures. There's numerous ones that really have kind of branched out all over the country. And I think one of the, in my opinion, one of the best things the VA has ever done is the VA has been offering adaptive sports grants. So the VA has funding, and then these nonprofits that offer recreational activities and things to veterans, whether it's adaptive biking, skiing, they can apply for VA specific grants, and then the VA helps fund them, you know, with the obligation that they, you know, offer programs specifically tailored to vets, which I think is just wonderful because it kind of takes the VA and the government out of some of that bureaucracy of spending those funds, and then they have resources, well-trained staff. So it's a win-win really for veterans and the VA to have that operational.
Yeah, sounds like it. Christy, you're involved with some, as we've already mentioned, people that have serious conditions like PTSD, substance abuse. You talked about serious mental illness. And the next part of our discussion today is going to be about a book that you've become involved with in the writing, and its name is Outdoor Recreation and Our Military Family, Pathways to Recovery. Tell us about your involvement in this book.
Yeah, this was a really great project. So it was out of the University of Utah, and one of the professors there, Daniel Dustin, this was his second outdoor symposium that he hosted. And from the symposium, he published a book. So every presenter that was at the symposium has a section in the book. And who was invited to the symposium were clinicians, nonprofit organizations, like we just talked about, folks like Higher Grounds and Adaptive Adventures, and then researchers who have been doing research on how nature and how time outdoors directly impacts, you know, veterans, the outcomes for, you know, improved quality of life for veterans with disabilities. And so it was a really great collaboration, you know, and then in the hopes of just carrying that education forward, finding better ways to run programs, you know, better follow up with veterans after they maybe attend a program. And so our section really focused on suicide prevention and how some of these opportunities and programs, you know, provide that spark. And sometimes that's all it takes, is a little bit of spark where a veteran can see that life is still worth living. There is joy to be had. There's a lot of research on that sense of awe. You know, and I know as outdoors people, you all have experienced where you crest that hill and you see that beautiful, you know, mountain scenery, and you're truly just in awe. There's something much larger than you, or you watch that sunrise or that sunset. So there's just a lot of great researchers there talking about how this is really important, and this is, you know, a direction that we need to keep growing for veteran services.
And so it sounds like the audience for the book is pretty broad. Anyone who has or knows a veteran or is interested in the topic, and we all should, 7% may not sound like much, but very likely everyone listening knows mm-hmm. a vet in their life, or at least a family who has a vet.
Absolutely. And I'll just, you know, a couple of the other sections in there, you know, that might be of interest to the listeners is Cry Me a River, The Healing Power of Moving Water, which was some research on that. reconstituting the tribe through river running, which goes back to sort of that sense of camaraderie and helping people build community. Diving into possibilities, which talks about scuba. Hiking off the pain, which talks sort of about long distance hiking and how hiking and being outside is meditative in nature. So there was some really interesting research, you know, being done with veterans, and truly the outcomes of all this research are absolutely being out in nature, being with a group of peers, having, you know, that sense of self-efficacy or improved self-confidence by tackling something you never have tackled before and being successful. So I do think that the book would be of interest to a lot of people, especially people who are interested in the outdoors. And although it's tailored specifically to veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, that is not unique to veterans. Many people have issues with post, you know, it could be from a car accident, it can be from the death of a loved one. So while this book is tailored to that, I think people would find benefit in reading some of the research, just as it relates to human trauma and disability in general. You know, although they're veterans, we're all human at the basic level.
I think that's one of the things that fascinates me most about the topic in the book is that after the last, say, 15 months of this COVID pandemic, there are a lot of people that are demonstrating some form, if not of PTSD, at least associated mental illness. And a lot of people are finding that there's a pathway in nature towards some healing and recovery. And as you've just touched on, this book in its broader context could be useful in that journey.
Oh, absolutely. And there's, you know, a lot of research on adolescence. And I think, although maybe it's not showing now, I do think that a lot of our youth have probably suffered from, you know, being isolated, being out of school, not being in their cohort. So the research is wonderful and worth taking a look at, even if you just order it and have it in one of your public libraries, you know, for multiple people to use it. Since it is a book published for academic reasons, it's a little pricier. I think it's maybe $80 or $90. You know, I know I've had friends that have ordered it and put it in their public library, so that way it's just a shared wealth of knowledge amongst the general population.
Hopefully one of our library directors is listening right now. If not,
that's right.
Julie or I can put a bug in their ear. They do take book requests. I know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he has a book. So this is the second symposium, and the first book, same publisher, Sagamore Publishing, was called Nature's Grace. So this is sort of a follow-up on the first symposium and how the programs have grown and, you know, best practices for some of these outdoor-based programs, because they're not all run by mental health clinicians, so dealing with you know, processing events and triggers as they come up with some of the discussion. So yeah, really great stuff. He's done a remarkable job out there at the University of Utah.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. Christy, your chapter has to do with suicide prevention among veterans. How does one understand how being in nature is helpful around preventing suicide? How do you come to that?
It's not necessarily always being in nature. I think it's feeling a sense of belonging is one of the big key concepts and takeaways. And I feel like in nature, we all belong. And I think you feel that sense of connection when you're out in nature, and especially when you're in a safe environment. And that's one way I think that we as just average citizens can help is, you know, make sure we're reaching out to veteran populations, including them in, you know, day hikes, trail hikes, learn to fish programs, things that will get them out there. And as I kind of talked about before, I think it's that sense of hope, that sense of awe, and that sense of joy that you just inherently get when you're outdoors and in nature and fresh air and sunshine, the stressors are reduced, and the research is there. If you guys are familiar with Earl Schaefer, do you know who he is? The first guy to hike the Appalachian Trail?
The absolutely fabulous Earl Schaefer, who did, if not his second hike, I think he did like a 50th anniversary hike of his first hike.
Right. So he was, I mean, he wrote about it in 1948 after he returned from World War II. Like that was his, he was going to hike off the war. So this is not, you know, cutting edge or new research. We know this, but I think sometimes we lose that grounding or that footing with all the screens and technology. We sometimes pull away from what we instinctively know is good for us. Yeah, nature is one of those.
That's really true. And I think Earl, I'm glad you brought Earl up, because he is that evidence that this idea goes back a long way. Yet an awful lot of people that I've encountered in doing nonprofit advocacy work around wilderness and hiking and trails over the last two decades, we see a lot of women out. And we see a lot of women out who explain that their husbands aren't there because they wore a backpack in the Army and that was enough for them, and they don't want to do it now, whether it's because they were tired from the experience or the experience also maybe dredges up some memories of association. How do we overcome those kinds of barriers?
Yeah, I think that's a great that's a great point, and it is a true obstacle, because I have heard that many, many times. I think sometimes finding other avenues, you know, you don't necessarily have to carry a lot of weight when you do a short day hike. There's things like fly fishing, there's things like rafting, now there's things like stand-up paddle boarding, archery. You know, I think sometimes finding other avenues to get people outdoors. And, you know, there's a lot of research that 120 minutes a day is the prescription. That's, or 120 minutes a week is the prescription for our time in nature. And there's some great research that it can't be less than that, but it can be broken up into smaller increments. So I think even just encouraging people to take a walk in their local park, have a picnic in the park, bird watching. I mean, there's so many other things that bring us outdoors and make us really appreciate nature, that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be a through hike. It doesn't have to be something arduous.
Right. I notice in the outline for the book, there are other areas such as gardening, and that's a big one. That's very calming.
Right. Oh yeah, there's gardening. And I know we don't have it at our VA, but I listened to a recreational therapist from another VA medical center talk about their beekeeping program. So like, what a win-win. You know, they have veterans, you know, learning to keep bees and, you know, helping keep bees alive and to cultivate that population that's just so vital to, you know, all of nature.
It's good to think the big picture.
So
like
I think
that.
There's just, you know, we have to be, yeah, I think we just have to be creative. And that kind of goes back to that, what matters most to you, you know, and really diving into those core values of where the veteran's at, meeting them, you know, where they are. And then just setting those real small, you know, incremental goals. Sometimes that's how I have to operate, of like, how about today you just get in the van with me and we just take a drive? Like, that's all I'm asking, is you to leave your house. And it could be as simple as that, is some of these folks, you know, as I'm sure a lot of folks during COVID, you know, have not left their house. There hasn't been a need, there's been COVID, there's fear. And if you already have a, you know, anxiety disorder or depression, you know, that just exacerbates that. So it's really starting small, being patient, you know, and just kind of understanding, you know, where people are at and how we can move forward. I had a Navy veteran tell me, I thought it was great, you know, when we were talking about setting goals and kind of your trajectory in life. And he said, you know, you cannot steer a ship unless it's moving. So sometimes it's just that tiniest bit, like, hey, let's just go on a picnic and sit at a picnic table in the woods. And it's a start.
Yeah. For folks with homes, even your backyard can be a start, just getting out of the house.
Yeah.
We have so many resources here locally, from community gardens to the seed exchange at the library, to various groups that people can join, like the Master Gardeners or Master Naturalists or Idaho Trails Association, Getting Out on a Trails Project, or the Friends of Scotch Peaks, our trail projects. And there's lots of opportunities. And I think one thing we've touched on in previous interviews during May is that we all know someone in our neighborhood, our community, who could use this help. And it's a matter of recognizing that community nature and keeping in touch with people, keeping an eye on them, making sure that they feel connected, reaching out to them when you can.
Yeah. And that's where I was going to go, Phil, is I think you don't have to be a clinician, a suicide, you know, expert. There's a lot of falsehoods about suicide that if you ask about it, it's going to make people think about it and, you know, want to kill themselves. That's absolutely not true, you know. And I think just destigmatizing, like if someone says, oh, you know, my, you know, gout's flaring up, or my, you know, diabetes or my cancer, people don't seem to flinch. But when people talk about their bipolar disorder, the reaction is very, very different, or their chronic depression. So I think just normalizing that, you know, mental health is a chronic condition in our society. I don't see it going away. So recognizing that it is a health condition, just as any other, you know, health condition. So help, you know, helping people through that, asking those questions, reaching out, you know, there's a psychology thing that's just called being with. And that as humans, we just seek to know that someone is thinking about us or holding us in, you know, their heart. And so when you spend time with someone, the message is, I'm here and you're worth it. And then the message they're receiving is, you're here, therefore I must be worth it. So just that value of human interaction can be super powerful. A text message, a phone call, like, hey man, I'm thinking about you. You know, let's go for a walk. Let's sit and have some tea. Whatever it may be, you know, but not, people tend to back off people with a lot of chronic mental health disorders because they're not comfortable with it.
That's probably a really good note as we close down the show. Before we come to an end, are there any last thoughts you'd have for our listeners to put them into a higher plane?
You know, I think just as you enjoy nature and as you get out and you know what personally is healing and satisfying for you, the same is true probably for many other people in need. And I think just, you know, knowing, you know, you guys are all, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are outdoor experts. And even though someone served in the military, I can tell you firsthand, that doesn't make them an outdoor expert. And so offering sort of that education on, you know, good footwear and sunscreen and those things where they can feel safe and secure, showing them a place that they can get out to that's, you know, accessible for their ability. You know, that they can easily access on their own. So I think just kind of pulling someone along with you as you're getting out and enjoying the outdoors, and letting them know that you care, that you're there. And hopefully that just kind of continues to feed this cycle of people that love the outdoors, want to protect the environment, and enjoy it all at the same time, because it is vital to our existence.
Well, Julie, what have we missed?
Well, I don't think we've missed much. It's given me so much to think about, Phil, and I'm thinking of people that I need to reach out to that I'd like to spend a bit of time in the outdoors with. So that's been a great little learning period for me. I want to thank you, Christy.
Oh, thanks, Julie. Yes.
So if you've just tuned in, this will be available as a podcast. Julie and I have been spending some time today with Christy Barr Rubin, a recreational therapist at the Cheyenne A Veterans Medical Center, and a contributor to a chapter on suicide prevention amongst veterans, What Can We Do? In the new book, Outdoor Recreation in Our Military Family, Pathways to Recovery. And that's all a mouthful, but you can replay the tape and hear it again. And hopefully we'll encourage our library to get a copy or two. Absolutely. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Julie, for hosting me. And keep getting those miles and spreading the groovy vibes.